13 residents at a veterans home in Quincy have died from Legionnaires' disease since 2015, and dozens more have gotten sick. Family members, lawmakers, and journalists have been asking how this happened, and when it comes to the VA and the Department of Public Health, who knew what and when? Eugene Miller died at the veterans home in 2015. Here's his son, Tim Miller, speaking to WBEZ.
And this is what angers me the most about this situation. They're putting all this effort into PR. Let's come up with some canned statements. Let's all be on the same page. Basically, it was like they drew a line in the sand and said, it's us against these grieving families, and we're going to rebut what they say.
Today, an exclusive interview with Dr. Nirav Shah, director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. We'll also continue our series of interviews with the Democratic candidates for Illinois' 13th Congressional District. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. We'll get started after the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. If you've been listening to our program over the past couple of months, you might be familiar with a story we've been discussing coming out of the Quincy Veterans Home. Since 2015, there have been four different outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease at the state-run facility. The result has been the death of 13 residents, with dozens more becoming ill. The cases continue, with the most recent outbreak involving four patients infected by the bacterial illness, which is treatable, just last month. But of course, this is more than a health crisis. It's a public health crisis and a political one at that. Crisis, by the way, isn't just our word. Governor Rauner used crisis to describe the situation himself last week in appointing a retired Marine veteran to coordinate what will happen next. And as of Monday, the Rauner administration is working on plans to tear down some of the buildings at the Quincy facility. That's a change from the governor's original pledge to maintain the building and overhaul the plumbing after he spent a week there in January. Questions remain about the timing of when not just families, but staff at the facility were notified about various outbreaks. Much of this was rehashed in a sometimes tense joint House and Senate committee meeting in Chicago on Monday, where lawmakers complained they learned of many details of the outbreak and what's being done through media reports. Much of that from WBEZ and Chicago Public Media. Their reporters Dave McKinney and Tony Arnold first investigated this story. That's despite the fact that the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health and the director of Veterans Affairs have spent as much as 10 hours explaining what went wrong to lawmakers in various hearings. With me now is the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, Dr. Nirav Shah. He's with me at our studios in Evanston at Northwestern University. Director Shah, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
It's a pleasure to be here, Nyla.
So, Director Shah, we said this health crisis, which is what the governor is calling it, began in Quincy in 2015. It continues to this day with most recently those four cases that I mentioned. You haven't done media interviews about this, but you wanted to relay what IDPH's role has been throughout multiple outbreaks. What should people know about what IDPH's role has been in this?
Well, thank you for having me here today, Nyla. And you're right. One of the main sets of misconceptions is what the role of public health is in managing and responding to an outbreak. In public health, when an outbreak arises, we really ask ourselves three main questions. The first is, who's at risk? The second is, from where are they becoming infected from? And then the third is, what sorts of measures can be put into place to reduce that risk? Those three questions really frame the role of public health. As to the first, who's at risk? Well, that's what our epidemiologists do. They sit down and look at the data on who's been affected and look for commonalities. Have they visited the same church in the past 2 weeks? Did they eat at the same restaurant? So that's the first question, who's at risk? And that's what our epidemiologists do. The second question is, from where are they getting infected from? And that's what our environmental health and environmental engineers do. They take samples of the air, the water, the whatever, the food, to try to figure out what the source of an outbreak is. And then the third question, what can we do to keep people safe, is what our clinical team does. They're working to provide recommendations to facilities, in this case, a veterans home, to make sure that the facility puts into place measures that ultimately can keep people safe.
So do you feel confident that in 2015 you all did that when the initial outbreak happened?
I do. And the reason I can say that is it's not just me that said that, it's the CDC that has actually taken a look at the response effort that DPH put into place and has endorsed that view. We at DPH actually follow a response plan that the CDC puts forth. It's publicly available. The documents are on their website. And it's a set of guidance documents that health departments across the country use when responding to Legionella outbreaks. And those documents shed more light on the three questions that I just framed. And we take a look at those documents when we're facing an outbreak. We pull the plan off the shelf, and we implement that very same plan using the same tools that any other health department would in the same way. And according to the CDC, that early implementation of interventions at the home to do things like turn off the fountains, restrict water, restrict bathing, things of that sort, are actually the things that led to a downturn in the number of cases 10 or 12 days later.
And so can you remind us the timing of this? Because at issue here for many people, whether they've been following the story or hasn't been, is that families, there was a 6-day period in 2015 when families and staff at the facility were not notified about what was going on from the time that you all found out about it.
Well, that's a great question, Nyla. And one really important point here is that the Department of Public Health notifies and works with facilities. Family notification, staff notification are left to the facility itself. The Department of Public Health in this situation on August 21st, late afternoon, on Friday, August 21st, we were notified of a second case. And that's what kicks us into action. And within 27 minutes, literally 27 minutes, we were on the phone with the facility to let them know of what was going on and giving them recommendations that they could put into place to, again, help keep people safe. It then comes to the facility, and we trust the facility in those instances to notify staff, family, et cetera. As you've probably heard Director Jeffries, Erica Jeffries, the Director of Veterans Affairs, discuss, they did do those things. But the obligation and the role of the Department of Public Health is to notify first and foremost the facility.
So do you think it was a mistake to trust the facility because they didn't notify families?
Well, there you'd have to check in with Director Jeffries at the Department of Veterans Affairs. But we trust facilities to make those notifications, to inform staff, to inform residents of what's going on. Our role is to provide them with public health recommendations, such as turning off the water, looking at testing to see if a cooling tower is implicated. Those are the scientific sets of recommendations that we work on. Issues of notification are ones that the facility always handles.
And I guess the question is, when it comes to a public health crisis, when for the public, I don't know that necessarily the public makes distinctions between, oh, I need to hear this from VA, or I need to be hearing this from whoever's running the home. As the person who's responsible for keeping our public and our citizens and our residents throughout Illinois informed about this, at what point was there a point when you thought they're not doing their jobs, I need to step in? Or are you saying you think they did their jobs as well?
Well, again, our role is to just make sure that the scientific recommendations are being made and that our scientific investigation is being done.
So you're saying it's not your role to inform the public about what's happening?
So as it relates to the public, we do, in fact, need to inform the public, and we did do that here. But the first responsibility is for the Department of Public Health to notify the facility and make sure the facility has in place the tools to keep people safe. We did eventually, once we had all the facts that we needed to, also inform the public. But the role of informing the public in this situation, it was not so that they could take steps to keep themselves safe or anything of that sort. The role of a press release in this situation is to let folks know something is going on at the home in your community, and we want you to know about it. But as it relates to patient safety, which is always our goal, there we communicate the recommendations directly to the facility, and they put those things into place that ultimately keep patients safe.
I'm speaking with Nirav Shah, Dr. Nirav Shah. He's the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. We're talking about the multiple outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease that have happened at a state-run facility in Quincy. Dr. Shah, it says on IDPH's website that one of your goals is also, and one of the roles as IDPH is also to set standards for nursing homes. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's a state-run nursing home. Do you feel like the standards were sufficient there in 2015 in terms of notifying people in the way that everything happened and unfolded?
Well, there are no set standards in any statute or rule or regulation as to when families need to be notified. Again, we trust facilities to do that on the schedule that they have set forth. And again, Director Jeffries at the Department of Veterans Affairs can discuss the nuances and the mechanics of those notifications. But in this situation, we did immediately alert the facility of what was going on. We provided them.
Right. No, yeah. you've said mm-hmm. that. I think you've made that really clear. I think mm-hmm. I'm asking just more of a general question about if you're responsible for standards at nursing homes, if you feel like the standards were followed in this instance. Well, do you feel comfortable that standards were followed?
I do. And there are no specific standards in terms of when a facility needs to notify somebody of something.
Do you think there should be? I mean, when people are dying, and in this case, we can get into some of the specifics here, mm-hmm. families are being notified 2 hours before a parent passes away that this is the disease that they had. Is that sufficient?
Well, I can't comment on any specific case. The department doesn't get involved with direct patient care. What I can tell you in this instance is that the Department of Veterans Affairs and the staff at the Quincy Veterans Home, per Director Jeffries, did follow their protocol in terms of notifying any family member anytime there was a change in status at any particular resident. But IDPH's role in this situation, we don't take care of any particular patient. We work with the facilities, as I've indicated, to make sure that they've got in place the public health recommendations around things like water purification, water restrictions, infection control, things of that sort.
So I think there's a lot of outrage we've heard from lawmakers, from people. No one, of course, is more affected by this than the families of those who were living at the Quincy Veterans Home and those who became ill. Many families have said they want accountability. 11 of them are involved in lawsuits against the state right now, and they want to know what happened. What would you say to them?
The first thing I would say is that my heart goes out to them. We, all of us at the Department of Public Health, all 1,200 plus employees, not a day goes by that we don't mourn the loss of anyone who's passed in an outbreak situation, particularly here, given that these individuals were our heroes and our veterans. And so the first thing I would say was that we are tremendously mournful and really we keep that in mind in any outbreak situation, that we're not just dealing with numbers, we're not dealing with people on a page, we're dealing with human lives. And we never forget that at the agency. Secondly, I hear their concern. I hear their questions. Similarly with the legislators, we're aware that they've got questions. Director Jeffries and I and the entire administration have pledged to be as forthcoming as possible. There is work going on right now with the Auditor General to do a compliance audit of the nature of the response that the administration has. And we have pledged to work with the Auditor General to get them every single document that they have asked for in unredacted form so that the auditor can take a look at everything and assess it. And we believe that's going to be the fastest, most transparent way to get the folks answers.
So that information, will that also be provided to lawmakers? Because I know they've been requesting that. Everything that goes to the auditor, will that also be provided to all the lawmakers who've requested information?
Well, it's an interesting, one of the benefits or one of the strengths of the Auditor General is that the Auditor General is able to receive documents that are not redacted at all, that have no private, that are completely filled with private health information. They have that authority by the statute. IDPH has a similar obligation to make sure that before a single document goes out at our front door, we've taken a look at it for private health information. We're a health agency, and as a result of that, we have a lot of health information. And reviewing those documents before they go, say, to the General Assembly, we have to take a look at them to make sure that any piece of private health information has been redacted, mm-hmm. so we're not giving it out. We have that obligation under HIPAA, but that obligation does not exist as to the Auditor General. So we're able to get the Auditor General documents in very rapid fashion. In short order, my understanding is that we will be producing tens of thousands, if not more, documents directly to the Auditor General because we don't have to review them for this private health information.
Do you think in this case, in a situation of this magnitude, it's important for your office to review them and provide them to lawmakers?
Well, we are planning on doing so, and the governor's office is coordinating this response to the requests for documents.
So do you have a time frame on that?
I'm not sure where we are. The governor's office is coordinating that. I can say that at least as to IDPH, I understand the lawmakers have asked for these documents, but we still have an obligation under HIPAA to review them and redact them for private health information.
And I guess the question is, this has been going on for 3 years. So this isn't, or even, you know, this first started in 2015. So mm-hmm. I wonder, at what point did you all realize this, we need to start redacting this information? People are, you know, lawmakers have been asking for this information for a long time. It's, mm-hmm. It's not a new situation.
Well,
so
the request from the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee came in mid-January. So
for this batch of information.
That's correct. We of course have been very focused on the situation since August of 2015 and have worked very closely with the CDC, the Department of Veterans Affairs, et cetera. But as it relates to this request for documents, that is one that came in mid-January of this year. So we have, let me sort of put it in different terms. A similar request from DPH of documents yielded about 40,000 documents. We have one person at DPH who manages these requests. If this individual reviewed 20 documents an hour for private health information, it would take him a full year.
And so there's no one else available at IDPH whose job is to do this.
At IDPH, we have one individual who responds to
requests. And have you asked the governor's office for more people to help you with this?
That's why they are actually coordinating this response, because clearly it's going to require more folks. But that gives you a sense of the magnitude of what we have to look at to preserve patient confidentiality.
We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Illinois's the director of the Public Health Department for the state of Illinois, Dr. Nirav Shah. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. My guest is Dr. Nirav Shah. He's the director of Illinois' Department of Public Health. We're talking to him about the numerous outbreaks of Legionnaire's disease that have occurred at a state-run veterans nursing home in Quincy, Illinois. 13 people at the facility have died from the treatable illness. Dozens more have been sick. The first outbreak was in 2015. The most recent one was last month when four people came down with the bacterial illness. As of Monday, the Rauner administration has reversed previous statements about what they're going to be doing with the facility and has started talking about tearing some of them down. Dr. Shah, I just want to get back to the families for a moment. You said that not a day goes by where you don't think about the families. And there's one family in particular that I wanted to ask you about from the 2015 outbreak, and that's the family of Eugene Miller. So for our audience who's not aware, he was 86 years old and he lived in the Quincy facility. He was gravely ill and he had expressed a desire not to have any extraordinary efforts made to prolong his life. And at the time, during that time, the Veterans Home contacted members of the family for permission to test him for Legionnaire's disease. They approved that and then had to wait 2 days to find out that he was sick. The test was positive. Email communication obtained by WBEZ later revealed that you all knew this was all during that week that you knew that this epidemic was going on. And I just wanted to play. So there's a moment that I want to ask you about. Mm-hmm. Eugene Miller's son had a Facebook post where he said that he felt this lack of communication killed his father. Here's what he said on. Oh, if you can, if, just so you mm-hmm. can hear what he said. Mm-hmm. Here's what he said on Facebook.
Now we have to deal with the fact that maybe we did not do all we could have. The situation was handled badly, to say the least, but the lack of communication, in my mind, killed my father, a hero who served his country only to die in its care.
That audio is from WBEZ. When did you first become aware of this Facebook post from Tim Miller? Because he posted all of this, what we just read on Facebook, saying that the lack of communication was what killed his father.
I'd have to go back and check. I believe it was in late August of 2015.
Okay. And so a day after that Facebook post circulated, a spokesman from the State Veterans Affairs Department forwarded a newspaper article to you from the Quincy Herald Whig. It was headlined, "Residents' Family Laud Illinois Veterans Home Staff as Legionnaires' Disease Cases Climb." And you responded, "Great story. Helps rebut the Facebook message we saw yesterday. Thank you." And then you forwarded that story to the governor's office. Again, we know this from WBEZ Chicago reporting. So I guess my question is, at a moment of crisis, when you know that at this point, I think five people were already dead,
no one was dead at that point.
No one had died yet.
Yes, that's correct.
But in the moment of this, why were you forwarding emails about positive press coverages to your boss, the governor? Was that your focus?
Well, let me first say, Nyla, that we are tremendously, tremendously mournful for the loss of Mr. Miller, and our hearts go out to his family. We certainly understand their sadness and their frustration with what's going on here. As to your particular question, one of the aspects of navigating an outbreak situation is communications. Communication is indeed the thread that goes through the entire agency. Now, my particular email that you read was insensitive, and that's not something that I'm proud of, and that's not something I should have communicated in that fashion. That being said, communication is a big part of how we manage an outbreak situation. We have to make sure that we are communicating and conveying what the facts are. In order to do that, we have to have the facts. And in that situation, what I wanted to make sure was that if we had a situation where someone did not feel that they had all the facts, well, how can we check that? Is there a way that we can determine whether that sentiment is widespread? Or is it something that requires more immediate intervention on the part of the facility?
And did you do that? Did that set off an alarm bell when you saw that Facebook post thinking, we notify the facility, but it doesn't seem like the facility is talking to these people?
Well, it did. And
what did you do?
We want to make sure that any communication that we are giving to the facility about what we know is being accurately transmitted back to families, et cetera.
But from that Facebook post, it doesn't seem like it was.
Well, that's why it was concerning. That's why claims by families that they do not have all the facts are things that are concerning. I think, from what I understand, there are additional facts that I'm not, because of some litigation that's going on, that I don't believe we're able to discuss. And so I can't go into the specifics. And again, IDPH doesn't have direct patient involvement in this situation.
So you didn't feel like you needed to reach out to Tim Miller or his family and discuss this situation?
That's a question we get a lot. And in this situation, in any facility outbreak situation, that's the role of the facility, of the doctors that are managing the patients. Public health's role in this situation is to take a look at the dynamics of the outbreak and see what steps we can put into place to stop that outbreak situation.
So, but when people say they're not being informed, and if part of your mission, as you're saying, is the communication and making sure, I guess what I'm asking, and it just doesn't seem, it seems like something, there was a failure here. And I guess what I'm asking is, when you see this as someone whose mission is ensuring public health and safety and communication, at what point why didn't you step in and say, something needs to be done about this? Did you do that?
I believe we did, actually. I'd have to go back and, again, take a look at my emails and phone calls from that time.
So you're not sure if you did?
Well, I don't have my emails from that time period right now. But anytime we would receive, in general, anytime we would receive information that suggests that the facts are not getting out there, that's a situation where we want to see what's going on. And again, we want to work with the facility in that case to determine how are they notifying families of changes in status. In Mr. Miller's case, again, that's a tragic event, and our hearts go out to them. My understanding is that there are further facts about the clinical case that IDPH is not involved with. But you know, Legionnaire's disease is unfortunate, but the questions about, for example, testing. IDPH doesn't test patients for Legionnaire's disease. It's the doctor at the hospital that tests patients for Legionnaire's disease. IDPH can provide guidelines, which we did, to all the healthcare providers in the Adams County area to let them know that there have been cases of Legionnaires affiliated with the facility, and to inform that they need inform doctors and hospitals that they need to keep their eyes open for Legionnaires. But as it relates to doing the testing, that's what the doctors on the ground who are providing direct patient care do.
And so let me ask you about who's in charge now, because I will tell you, I listened to 3 hours of the hearing on Monday, and it was not clear to me who's in charge of this crisis. Is it the, what role does the public health department play in this? What is Veterans Affairs doing? There's now a special, is it senior advisor or special advisor to Governor Rauner? He announced on Friday, Michael Hoffman. Do you report to him?
So as it relates to Legionella matters, Mike Hoffman is coordinating the next phase of the response. And that's a response that, so I think you heard Director Jeffries speak about, that will involve issues around procurement, logistics, construction. Those are not DPH's areas of operation. And so having someone like Mr. Hoffman, who has a background in logistics, who ran the central management services, as we move into that next phase, that will be really, really helpful.
But who's in charge?
For Legionella matters, Mike is coordinating the entire response.
So you report to him now in terms of advising him. Like, as you were saying, you advise the facilities of things. So now you're advising him.
As it relates to Legionella matters in the Quincy home, yes.
Okay.
Mike is the one that I am giving recommendations to, that I'm in contact with on a day-to-day basis.
Is that clear to you, this process? Because it seems not so clear to me, the process of how this is all. So he's managing, he's the point person for communications and for everything.
Yes. And as it relates to all Legionella matters, Mike is the man who is coordinating the entire response. DPH's role in this situation, given that the next phase of the response is going in that direction, our role, however, remains as it has been in public health, which is to continue working with the facility directly to look at environmental testing results, to provide clinical recommendations. Our clinical staff is on the phone with the facility several times per week, looking at all the cases they've got to actively look for further cases of Legionella. That work on behalf of IDPH continues unabated and unchanged. But as it relates to the next phase of the response, Mr. Hoffman, Director Jeffries are coordinating that.
And so as you say that they're coordinating that, at what point do you feel like this has gone on for 3 years? Was there ever a point where you thought IDPH should step in and say, we need someone like, I mean, it's taken 3 years to have one person be a point person. Did you ever want to make a recommendation earlier that there would be someone else coordinating this?
Well, I think the coordination up until now has been quite, you know, we've worked very closely with IDPH, at least, has worked very closely with local partners on the ground, Adams County Health Department, the Veterans Home, as well as with the State Department of Veterans Affairs, as well as with the CDC. And again, as it relates to the public health response, which is focused on epidemiology, environmental health, clinical recommendations, those we have mainly communicated directly to the facility. We haven't been involved with issues around construction, plumbing, piping, things of that nature.
Did you feel like you should make recommendations about plumbing and piping as this continued to, because again, is your role in this is the epidemiology, as I imagine, informing them? You know, there's been lots of conversation about how difficult the bacteria is to get out of the system. Did you make a recommendation as everyone else is saying we should shut this home down? Did you all feel like you should make those recommendations as well?
IDPH does not make recommendations around issues of that nature. We work on recommendations on managing and responding to outbreaks. Our position is and has always been that if a facility opts to shut down and relocate patients, we are able to provide them with guidance, ask them questions to guide that process, to ask them, for example, where would you move patients to? What would the transport be? What would the caregiver situation look like? Our role in that situation is to involve our Division of Patient Safety to help the facility think through those questions. But the question of whether to move, to relocate, anything of that nature, is something that's fundamentally to the facility.
As people have continued to get sick, as it seems like the communication of this, as you've talked about, has been a concern, What is your department? And I know you said this on Monday in the hearing. You said to lawmakers, we're going to do a better job with communication going forward. Do you think you should do things differently going forward?
Well, in that situation, let me first clarify that, or note that the department's work at the home is not, I don't want to suggest that we're stepping away. We are continuing with the public health aspects of this. We are working with the facility to actively look for cases, continuing with environmental health testing, et cetera. As it relates to communication, in that situation, what I was referring to in specifics with the committee is that in public health, sometimes we have a tendency to communicate with our traditional partners. We communicate with hospitals, public health departments, facilities. What we have not done as good of a job at is communicating with partners such as the Veterans Affairs Committee, which oversees the home in which we were working. So my job going forward, which I will pledge to do, is to be in better communication with committees of that sort, oversight bodies that are looking over the facilities that we are often working in.
Dr. Shaw, I just want to ask you about a lot of our conversation has focused on the role that IDPH plays. And I think when one looks at public health, it's very clear that trust is an important part of this. People mm-hmm. need to trust their public health department. Maybe even more so, I think maybe we don't even feel that way about politicians sometimes. But I think when we think about public health, we don't think it should be political. We think mm-hmm. we should trust our public health officials. You're nodding. I want to ask you about something else your department and you directly have also come under criticism for, and that's the implementation of screening for Krabbe disease. Mm-hmm. There were babies who died in Illinois, at least three of them, because screening for the disease, which was mandated by law, took 10 years to be implemented by your department. This first came up in 2015. It wasn't until this past December 11th, that you notified hospitals IDPH would begin testing. And I'm bringing this up only again back to this issue of trust, because I think one foundation of a public health department is that the public trusts you. You told lawmakers on Monday that IDPH's singular goal is to protect health and improve mm-hmm. lives throughout the state. But I don't think you can do that if the public trusts you. So I just wanted to ask you, given the multiple deaths, the more than a dozen people in Illinois, babies, veterans, and their families that have died while you have been director of the Department of Public Health, do you think you still have the public's trust?
I think I do. I hope I do. And if I don't, I need to work to earn it. What I will say is, first, with respect to Krabbe, that was a law that was passed far too long ago in 2010. When we came in January of 2015, we realized that implementation of that law was not where it needed to be. And our laboratory team picked up the ball at our direction and started running with it as quickly as possible. It was far too late. It should have been done years and years earlier. But it was something that we felt needed to happen, even if it was years delayed at that point. And we were able to get testing online. Again, that's cold comfort to the families who waited far too long. And it should have been...
Right, and whose children died.
Exactly. It should have been done years and years and years before. But it was a top priority, and we were able to bring it online a few months ago. With respect to trust generally, you're absolutely right. Trust is vital to the work that any state agency does, but most critically with respect to health. The department is effectively charged with keeping everyone in the state safe. And we do that by erecting this invisible force field around our lives. And I like to tell people, if you went to a restaurant at any point in the last day, if you drove down a street, if you played somewhere in a park and didn't get sick, that was because public health was there keeping you safe. We do this at IDPH, not on our own. We work very closely with local health departments.
But you
hospitals.
Think so, and we're almost out of time here, but just to be clear, it sounds like you think despite all of this, you still have the trust of them. I guess my question is, do you think the public still deserves to trust you after all of these things have happened?
I do think so. And the reason there is that we're focused on looking back at where we may have fallen down on the job, and always looking toward continuous improvement in that regard.
Even though bipartisan groups of lawmakers have also called for you to resign, you still think, I'm going to stay in this job, the public's going to trust me.
I disagree with those calls, and I have every intention of continuing the work at the agency.
That's Dr. Nirav Shaw, Director of Illinois Department of Public Health. Thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
The 21st is made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, presenting The Aesthetics of Collective Experience, March 9th at 4 p.m. at Spurlock Museum. Artist Amanda Browder will discuss her public art project, Chromatopia, and giving voice to a community with collaborative art practices. cas.illinois.edu.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about the numerous outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease that occurred at the Quincy Veterans Home. 13 people have died from the illness, the treatable disease. Four outbreaks have happened since 2015, the most recent of which was last month. Four people infected then. As of Monday, the Rauner administration has reversed previous statements about what they will do with the facility. The governor actually spent some time there in January. At that point, they were talking about replacing pipes. Now they've started talking about tearing down some of those buildings. We know a lot of these things originally because of reporting that happened from WBEZ in Chicago. Dave McKinney and Tony Arnold have been leading reporting on this outbreak for months now. Joining us now from WBEZ is Dave McKinney on the line from Chicago. Dave, welcome to the welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Hey, good morning, Nyla.
Dave, let me just start by asking, you have tried to ask Director Shaw repeatedly for interviews to answer some of the questions based on your reporting. You were listening into that interview there. I just wanted to ask you just first what your reaction was to what he said.
Well, I mean, I think he broke some news there. I mean, he talked about the email and the interactions with the families, the Miller family in particular. And I think what, you know, when you cited that email that was delivered from Facebook from the son of Mr. Miller, he talked about that being insensitive and not something he was proud of. I mean, that's the first kind of acknowledgement that when he talked about rebutting a Facebook message that, you know, it was his first reaction to that. I also think it was interesting to your question about whether he would resign. He plans to remain on, and he talks about if I don't have the public trust, I need to work to earn it. So I think you have two kind of developments right there that are interesting.
Let me that public trust issue. I just want to ask you. You've done reporting you've spoken to many of these families. As I mentioned earlier, for people who are just tuning in, of the 13 deaths, 11 families are now involved in lawsuits against the state, some of which are led by our Attorney General, Lisa Madigan. There, she's representing some of them. What are the families saying? What did they tell you about the communication side of things?
Well, they were very disappointed, and that really is the crux of many of their lawsuits. It's a common thread. A lot of these people began noticing symptoms in their families or in their family members, and they weren't even aware that there was a Legionnaires problem at the home. As Director Shaw indicated, I mean, the home knew about it on August 21st of 2015 when there were two confirmed cases of it. And a lot of these people were starting to get sick in that period of time, and there was no public notice given until August 27, 6 days later. Director Shaw has said in the past that that's their protocol in alerting the public, but I think a lot of families believe that had they known that there was that illness going about, they would have pressed to have antibiotics delivered to their family members much quicker, testing done much quicker, perhaps even taking them out, putting them in the hospital. So that's really at the heart of this, and I think that's the basic problem that the state faces in confronting this problem from 2015.
And Dave, I wonder if we can take a step back here and you can explain a lot of what we heard Director Shaw say was it wasn't his role in the Department of Public Health to be informing people. From your reporting, what is the role of Veterans Affairs supposed to be? What is the role of the Department of Public Health supposed to be? Who was supposed to be managing this communication?
Well, I mean, it's clear from the beginning that both of these agencies were integrally involved in the way this played out. I think Director Shaw laid out what his agency's involvement was in the early stages where they were recommending, they were doing the testing, overseeing the testing results, recommending steps that ought to be taken to try to mitigate the spread of Legionnaires. I mean, there were other agencies involved too, but that's certainly what public health is supposed to do. Veteran Affairs, on the other hand, they run the home and they make the decision on staffing, and they do decide and implement ways to communicate with family members and staff. But look, what happened on August 27th, that was the day that the first public press release was delivered about this fatal outbreak in 2015. Both agencies participated in the drafting of that. So both were involved in the communication strategy of it and the implementation of it.
I wanted to ask you about some of those emails that were obtained by WBEZ that talk about that communication. As you mentioned, that news release that happened on August 27, 2015, they reported 8 cases of Legionnaires' disease and no deaths. The next day, another news release reported 2 deaths from 23 total cases. And then on September 1st, there's another release with details of 7 deaths and 39 cases of Legionnaires. I want to just go back to some of the emails. That's just the timeline to lay out for everyone. I know this can kind of get a little bit complicated. But the day after the first news release, Melanie Arnold, who is a spokeswoman in the Illinois Department of Public Health, sent an email warning of, quote, a big jump in illnesses and advising against sending more news releases. And she instead recommended putting the information on the website. And she said, we're being transparent, but not continuing to put this in the media's eye. What has the Rauner administration said about those messages as well?
Well, I mean, they haven't reacted a great deal. I mean, in the hearing we had earlier this week in Chicago with Director Shaw and Director Jeffries, who heads the Veteran Affairs Department, they weren't really asked about the emails or the emphasis in those emails on messaging and talking points like that. I expect that in a future hearing there will be more discussion about that, you know, assuming that both directors agree to continue testifying. Those emails that we were able to secure from the Adams County Health Department showed a great deal of emphasis during the period of time when people were getting sick with, you know, basically how this whole crisis was being portrayed in the media.
And you heard Dr. Shaw say that he said it was insensitive, the email that he sent. So there's a lot, you all have been reporting on these email exchanges that are happening between IDPH and Veterans Affairs and the emails that are going back and forth about how to handle this. I asked Director Shaw about the email he forwarded about a story saying this rebuts that Facebook post. I just want to ask something. He just said to me that when he forwarded that newspaper article, he said that no one had yet died. But is that correct? Because obviously at the point, this is August 29th, when he sent that Facebook message, obviously Tim Miller's father had already passed away, but were there other residents that had also already passed away from Legionnaires' disease?
You know, I believe our count in the timeline we've been maintaining is about 4 people. And I think the issue may be that they were still awaiting test results in some of those, but certainly in Mr. Miller's case, the day he died, 4 hours prior to his death, the family was given notice that he had tested positive for Legionnaires. So, you know, at least in that case, it was clear that you know, he had died. And don't forget the story of Mrs. French, Dolores French, who was found in her unit. It was, I believe, on the 28th. There were a number of deaths prior to that. And I think every single one of those cases, somebody there had to have an inclination that these might not have just been common pneumonia cases when they knew that Legionnaires was going through that place.
So when he said no one died, I guess what you're saying is the tests had not yet confirmed that people had died from Legionnaires' disease.
Certainly in some of the cases.
There was a public hearing, and we've been talking about this on Monday. It got pretty tense. Republican State Senator Sam McCann was one of the lawmakers who called again for Dr. Shaw to step down as a director or for the governor to fire him. He also said, you, sir, disgust me. Dave, you were in the room for that. Can you explain a little bit more about that moment and what that was like?
Well, Sam McCann had, at a previous hearing, I believe, he had indicated, at least on one of their occasions, that he believed that Director Shaw should step down. And now there's a little history between McCann and the governor. I mean,
there's no love lost there, I guess we
can
say.
No love lost. And, you know, the governor had tried in 2016 to defeat him in a primary, and that did not work. So there's some bad blood there. But that being said, when Sam McCann, who represents part of Central Illinois near Springfield, you know, said, "You disgust me," it was, you know, the room just kind of grew silent, and people were sort of taken aback by it. It was blunt language, to be sure. And, you know, again, it just sort of focused attention on the fact that this is not only Democrats that are making noise about this and looking to hold somebody accountable. And Director Shaw, you know, can talk about wanting to earn, if trust has been lost in him, he can talk about wanting to earn it back. But ultimately, he serves at the pleasure of Governor Rauner, and a decision on whether he stays or goes is certainly in the governor's hands.
What role is the legislature playing in all of this now? I was struck by the hearing on Monday how much they were asking the Departments of Veterans Affairs, saying, "Look, you all just need to give us a number. We have a." I heard Senate President John Cullerton, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave McKinney said, "I have a bill ready to go for you. Just give me the number of how much money you need to fix this, and we will do it. But you haven't given us the number."
Yeah, I mean, that was Senator Cullerton's distant cousin, Tom Cullerton from DuPage County.
Who co-chairs
this committee that was looking into it. The legislature plays a key role here. I mean, their function in government is to appropriate money. And if the plan is to rip up all the plumbing or to knock down all the buildings and rebuild on this campus, then that money has to be appropriated by the General Assembly. And there's a level of frustration, I think, and you're right. You certainly heard it from Senator Cullerton. They have not been given a plan yet on what exactly the administration wants to do there. Director Jeffries during the hearing indicated that there would be a preliminary plan that would surface at the end of this month and a final plan on May 1st for the legislature to consider. But, you know, that's May 1st is still a ways off, 6 weeks away, more than 6 weeks away. And, you know, the way that people continue to get sick over there, I think there is a great deal of concern among some on this committee that people could, you know, continue being subjected to legionnaires over there.
So the timing of this then, it sounds like, is we're not going to know what's going to happen at least until the end of March and probably not until the beginning of May?
That's what they indicated. And, you know, the other point about the legislature, really quickly, I mean, there's some active pieces of legislation there that would deal, that sprung out of this. There are a couple of bills that would require a 24-hour notification period in veterans' homes if there is an outbreak of an infectious disease like Legionnaires. That, as Director Shaw pointed out, there's no clarity in the statute on something like that. There's also a bill that would, get rid of the caps that exist on the possible awards that these families suing the state can get. Right now, the limit is $100,000 per family. And in the private sector, some of these Legionnaires cases that have gone, you know, to trial result in judgments of, you know, $2 million. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how those bills play out in the legislature.
Dave, this hearing was, I mentioned, tense all around, not just for Dr. Shaw. You got pulled into this as well. And I wanted to ask you, after the meeting wrapped, you tried to ask questions of both Dr. Shaw and Erica Jeffries, the director of Illinois Veterans Affairs. What happened?
Well, I mean, I guess it's sort of an occupational hazard of reporting. I mean, what we often do after hearings, you know, questions spring to mind or there, you know, there might not be answers that were completely fleshed out. And typically people who testify will stop and answer reporters' questions. And in this case, in the Blandick building in Chicago, a decision was made to not take any reporters' questions. And so at a rapid clip, both Director Jeffries and Director Shaw, along with their press attachés, headed for the elevators. And so we were sort of left to be flinging questions at them. Neither one would answer. I asked Director Shaw directly about why he didn't send that Facebook message to the governor's office as he had that news article. No answer. I asked him his reaction to Senator McCann's call for his resignation. No answer. And it was kind of a cat and mouse game with these elevators. Once they arrived, the doors wouldn't open, so these guys were stuck there, and they then resorted to going to a freight elevator nearby, hoping to get away from reporters. And that's sort of where we encountered Director Jeffries, and when we asked her more about the plan to take, you know, what they were going to do over at Quincy in terms of, you know, rebuilding, she got she wouldn't answer the question. And then that's when she basically told me and another reporter that when she talks to journalists, she wants to talk to those who have journalistic integrity.
And you asked her another question after that. As journalists do, we like to follow up.
Yeah. I asked her, to whom were you referring? And then, in the background, you can hear, "Hold that elevator," you know, so they were in a hurry to get out of that building.
And that question was not answered. Dave, we have less than a minute left. Just very quickly, what are questions are you asking yourself as you continue to follow this?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest question is, what exactly is it does the Rauner administration plan to do? I mean, we've heard a little bit of conflicting messages. I mean, Director Jeffries in testimony this week seemed to be leaning toward rebuilding there rather than just simply ripping up plumbing. You know, we're all eager to see kind of what that plan is, what it will look like, what will happen to the residents there during, you know, any sort of rehabilitation period over there where they're doing construction. So that's the big question. And, you know, I think there's still a lot of forensic work that needs to be done in terms of the responses. How well was staff notified? How were these families notified? You know, there's still a lot of that to be played out, including, right, you know, ongoing battles with the administration on records requests.
Thanks for that. Dave McKinney from WBEZ will tweet out all of his reporting. That's all the time we have for today. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.